Of Fort McMurray, Wood Buffalo, and the rest of the world. You've tuned in to the Mac City Morning Show. I'm your host, Elliot Pierre. We're going to start today's episode off the same way we start every episode off, with a moment of gratitude. I know you could be doing a million other things with your time, and the fact that you spend it with us truly does mean the world to me, so thank you. On that note, Tanner, hit him with the intro.
How's it going, you guys? It's Jake White, JJW, coming at you from Norrell Toyota in Fort McMurray. Just wanted to say hi and come on down and check the place out.
Hi, my name's Richard. I'm the service manager here at Norrell Toyota.
Hi there, I'm Adam. I'm here at Norrell Toyota. I'm a product advisor.
Hi, I'm Cass. I'm the appointment coordinator. Happy to help you.
Hey, it's Keith Simpson here. I'm the general manager of Norrell Toyota, soon to be Fort McMurray Toyota. Pretty excited for our new dealership. As you've seen, you met all my staff. These guys are all my family. We're here to take care of you. Come on down and be part of our family.
And we are back. Big shout out to Norrell Toyota, our title sponsor for today's episode. We really do appreciate your ongoing support. As everybody at home knows, I don't introduce my guests because they could do a better job at that than myself. So, sir, can you please tell everybody at home who you are and what you're about?
Sure, yeah, thanks, Elliot. My name is Manuel Escoto, and I'm the Director of Public Engagement and Communications with the Kitty Foundation of Canada, specifically the Northern Alberta and the Territories branch.
Okay, so we're here in Edmonton today.
Correct.
Right on Jasper. This is a pretty sweet, like, location.
Yeah.
So in regards to what you guys do, can you please explain a little bit? Renee did a really good job at explaining her new role in Fort McMurray,
mm-hmm.
but as an organization in whole, like, what are you guys really up to?
Yeah, certainly. So as an organization, what we really try to support is the kidney and transplant community, and specifically our patient, family, or donors.
Okay.
Focusing on the kidney piece first, of course, we're called the Kidney Foundation.
Right.
You know, one of the main things that we try to do is raise awareness. Mm-hmm. Raise awareness on kidney disease, raise awareness on kidney failure, and all the difficulties that come with that.
Right.
One in 10, I know Renee said this, 1 in 10 Canadians suffers from kidney disease, and here in Alberta, over 500,000 people themselves have been diagnosed with kidney disease.
Okay.
But it's not really talked about. Like, nobody talks about it as a foundation. Like, we're still trying to build our awareness. We're still trying to build the importance of kidneys, because people aren't talking about it.
Right.
Now, one of the things that I've noticed as a patient myself, I'm a kidney transplant recipient myself, is once you start talking about it, like, you make connections so quick, boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom. You know, whether it's your friend, an aunt, a cousin, siblings, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do first and foremost, is build awareness. We want people to be healthy.
Yeah.
We want people to be getting their kidneys checked out, because with kidney disease, unless you're being active and you're getting checked out, you really don't know that your kidneys are failing or declining until it's too late.
Oh, okay. And so how do you know? How do you test?
Yeah, very, very simple. Talk to your family doctor, get blood work, get a urine test. I mean, they're the experts in that.
That's right.
But number one, just talk to your doctors, say, I'd like to get my kidneys checked out.
Yeah.
And especially especially if you yourself have a high blood pressure or diabetes or any family history, those are the two most common causes of kidney disease and kidney failure.
Okay.
So if that's in your history, definitely be following up.
Is there anything that people, like you just said, it could be in your history, family history. Is there anything that people could be doing just in their day-to-day lives that could be affecting their kidneys? I think the obvious one is drinking.
Yes and no. I mean, certainly everything in moderation, right?
That's right.
So, you know, myself as a transplant recipient, you know, moderation, you know, whether when it comes to food, like healthy diets, exercise,
right,
all that stuff. Like, I don't think there's one thing that you can be doing that can be affecting your kidneys per se.
Right.
It's just generally living a healthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
Now, because there's 5 stages of kidney disease.
Okay.
So once you know you're in one of the 5 stages of kidney disease,
right,
then you can alter certain things. So, like, eat healthier, you know, if you're, you know, depending on what your specific circumstances, so this is very general, but depending on your specific circumstances, like, you might need a high phosphorus diet or a low phosphorus diet or low sodium or high protein, etc. So that's why the first step is really understanding where you're at,
if
you have kidney disease or one of the 5 stages.
Yeah.
And then from there, kind of figure out with your healthcare practitioner what it is that you specifically need.
Yeah. So in your case, how did you find out? What age were you? What was that whole process like?
Yeah, I'm an interesting case. So I'm what they call at the time that I was diagnosed a crash start.
Okay.
So I had no idea I had kidney disease until I ended up in emergency.
Oh.
So I was 19.
Okay.
It was my first semester of university.
Yeah.
Everything was going well. And then about the last 2 weeks of you know, right before finals, I started feeling off.
Mm-hmm.
Eyesight went a little bit blurry, then started getting headaches. But basically, within a span of about 2 weeks, I went from my first symptom, which was a little bit of blurry vision, to, like I said, landing in emergency.
Wow.
So I had no idea that was happening. And, you know, even going through emergency, actually funny, not funny story, but a little bit of a funny story.
Yeah.
You know, following up with my family doctor, he called me on New Year's Eve and he said, hey, your blood work's back. Doesn't look the best. Go to emergency. I understand it's New Year's Eve, so like,
right.
Go first thing in the morning if you want. So
yeah.
Sure enough, first thing in the morning. I say mine's an interesting case because what I found out afterwards is what caused my kidney failure is something that I was actually born with.
Oh.
So when I was born, I was diagnosed with what's called posterior urethral valves.
Yeah, yeah.
Impacts the bladder, impacts a bunch of things on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, I was in and out of the hospital, so that life wasn't new to me.
Right.
But what we didn't know is that this initial diagnosis, which was corrected through surgeries and medication as a child,
right.
Caused damage to my kidneys. So it caused scarring, and eventually it led to failure.
Yeah.
But earlier, you know, I mentioned you don't know until it's too late.
Yeah,
so
right.
Symptoms weren't there until I was at very, very low renal capacity.
Right.
Ended up in emergency, you know, and because of my previous experience, you know, I remember driving there with my parents and, you know, yeah, it's fine. Like, don't worry, Mom. Don't worry, Dad. Like, I'm okay. Worst case, I'll spend a couple days in the hospital.
Right.
I love hospital food. Don't judge me. Don't judge me. But I'm like, you know, I'll eat some hospital food and it's fine.
Yeah.
And sure enough, a couple of blood tests later, urine tests, the doctor, emergency doctor came back and said, your kidneys have failed, you need dialysis, and
wow.
You're going to need transplant. I'm 19. What?
Yeah.
What's dialysis? Like, your kidneys? Okay, what? What about kidneys and transplant? Like, I had no idea what was happening. And my mom was there with me and you know, trying to keep it together as a, you know, for my mom.
Yeah.
And again, all very foreign words to me, you know, try to keep kind of straight face. And I asked the doctor, I'm like, well, what's dialysis? Because he's like, you need to go on this like right away. Like, my kidneys were at like 1%.
Wow.
Like so there's this part of your kidneys filter something called creatinine.
Okay.
So typically a normal level of creatinine for males would be about 80 to about 120. So like that's you're fairly normal. Your kidneys are fine. When people typically get diagnosed, they're about 1,000 to maybe 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
When I was diagnosed, it was over 2,100.
Wow.
So like the fact that I was alive and hadn't got into cardiac arrest,
that's right,
was by some sort of miracle.
Yeah, miracle itself.
I'll say, but anyway, just to say that I had no idea what this was. I asked the doctor, hey, what's dialysis? And he kind of explained the procedure to me. So dialysis, very lovely picture back here of what it looks like to sit in the chair. But I had no idea what that was. I had never heard of this before.
Yeah.
So I, you know, he explained to me, you know, you're going to be hooked up to a machine. It's going to be filtering your blood. And I imagined that I was going to be like permanently 24/7 hooked up to a machine. I was going to be walking around with an IV, with everything.
Yeah.
And that was going to be my life. And it was at that moment that I'm like, I just lost
it.
I couldn't. Like, sorry, Mom, I was trying to be strong for you, but I just couldn't.
And,
but that's not a unique case. This happens to so many people
where they
don't find out and it's too late. And it might not be as drastic where it's where you need dialysis right now, but it's pretty severe where the outcomes, you know, can't be reversed or anything like that.
So when you say transplant, like, some people like watch this show and like, Ellie, you don't know so much. Like, you're acting. I'm like, I'm not acting. I just don't know a lot about a lot. So when it comes to like getting your transplant, that's obviously like a organ donor that has given you that. Like,
correct.
Were you, how long were you on the list for? Like, how does that process even like take place?
Yeah, all excellent questions. So there's two ways you can receive an organ, from a deceased donor or a living donor.
Okay.
So with kidneys, liver, and lungs, you can receive it from a living donor.
Okay.
Yeah. So lungs. Like part of your, you can donate one lung. You can donate a piece of your liver.
Okay.
Again, depending on how much they they take, for a lack of a better word. It depends on certain circumstances.
Yeah.
But the cool thing with the liver is it, like within a 2-week span, it grows back.
Okay.
Which is very interesting. But with kidneys, you have two. And technically, you only need one to live
a long, healthy life.
So
your liver regenerates?
It regenerates. Yeah, the liver regenerates.
So you, like, let's say I was your donor. They would take out a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd give it to you. You'd get it. And then my own would start to regenerate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. I had no idea.
I didn't know that either until, well, obviously, working in this world, right? But with the kidneys, so that you can get a living or a deceased donor.
Okay.
Once you start dialysis, it has to be a match.
Okay.
A lot of things which are way over my head. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
But of course, like, but blood work, and they look at your HLA typing, and a lot of things that, that's why we have brilliant scientists out there who are looking at this and who are taking care of you throughout the process.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be a match. So in my case, I was fortunate enough to receive a kidney from my mom, a living donor, from the beginning said, it's going to be me.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. Every time I share my experience, I say, I am so lucky because I had a fantastic support system in my family and friends, and my mom, my dad, and two of my brothers. My sister was too young at the time, but they all stepped up and they said, yes, test us.
Mm.
From there, it was my mom who was the best match, and she just went through the complete process. They screened everything on the donor's end, right?
Yeah.
They don't want to take a kidney if it's going to cause them harm, whether immediate or long-term. So when you donate a kidney, and they won't take a kidney or an organ from you unless you're, like, completely healthy.
That's right.
So that's a positive. So she went through the whole process. I was on dialysis for about 21 months, so just under 2 years.
Okay.
Until I finally got my transplant. And got my transplant September 4th, 2007.
Okay.
So we're about to go on to 16 years.
Congratulations,
bro. 6 weeks now. That's
nuts.
Thank you.
So something I got a question. You were saying, like, you thought you were going to be walking around with this thing all the time.
Yeah.
That's not the case, but I have no idea, and I think a lot of people would be in the same boat. How often did you have to come and sit and do the dialysis?
Yeah, great question. So with this specific one here, you do this in center, so in a community set, like in a community hospital or in the hospital.
Right.
So I was at the University of Alberta Hospital. You go 3 times a week.
Oh, geez. Okay.
The treatment itself, like, you're physically hooked on for about 4 hours.
Which is
a lot. And it wasn't painful. I can't speak to other people's experience. It wasn't painful. But it drains.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like, that drains you physically, mentally. It is exhausting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, patients like to call it a double-edged sword, dialysis, because it is a life-saving treatment.
That's right.
Without that, I'm not here.
That's right.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But the treatment itself wears you down. Because you get the treatment. So my runs were Tuesday, Thursday, Saturdays. So on Tuesday, I was already ready for dialysis. Like, I needed it. My body needed it.
Right.
Exhausted from the run itself. The next day, you're recovering.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on to Wednesday. You're recovering because it's still exhausting.
Yeah.
Maybe Wednesday evening, you're like, okay, I'm kind of feeling like a little bit myself again.
Yeah.
And then Thursday, you're scheduled for your run. Mine was an evening one.
Right.
It's like, you can already feel the impact of the toxin, right? Because kidneys, they filter out all the toxins.
Right.
This does the work of your kidneys, but at a 10% rate is what they say.
Right.
So your blood is being cleaned, but not to its full capacity like what kidneys do.
Yeah.
So it's exhausting. Again, I was younger. Mm. I had a great support system.
Yes.
So my family took care of everything. Because he's probably going to be watching this, I give a shout out to my brother, Chris, all the time. He drove me every run for 2 years. He picked me up, and he dropped me off, for dialysis, and he picked me up.
Holy.
Every run. Like, maybe the odd one here or there, not.
Yeah.
And I was lucky to have that. And I would come home, you know, 10:30 in the evening, and my mom would have, you know, dinner ready for me.
Yeah.
And the next day, you know, like, I just had all these supports, but that's not the reality for a lot of patients. So to your question earlier, that's what we're here for. We're here to support patients.
Mm.
A lot of the programs that we offer are to fund different types of needs that they need when they need it most.
Right.
So I always like to say that we're the last line of defense, right? Because So if you're a patient, you know, there are government programs, there's family supports, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when all that is exhausted and you literally have nowhere to go for food, for gas to get to dialysis or like even a taxi or a bus pass, things like that, you know, groceries, paying for your housing because you're on this, you can't really work. One, that's a part-time job in and of itself.
That's right.
But when you feel the way you do, like you can't work, right? So depending on your level of support, like, we pay and we support for so much, whatever it is that patients really, what they need.
Right.
We are there to pay and to provide those supports that they need.
Yeah.
On the financial level, right? So we have our short-term financial assistance program,
which
is one of our more utilized programs. Because if they don't have that, where do they go?
That's right.
There's nowhere else to go. Yeah. We don't want them on the streets. Mm-hmm. We want them to get the treatment they need so they can stay as healthy as possible until they get that transplant.
Right.
With transplant, you know, if you get sick enough, they'll take you off the list. You have to be at a certain capacity to receive that. So that's what we're here to do. We're here to provide that support. We're here to provide, I know Renee talked a little bit about the peer supports that we provide.
Mm-hmm.
I was 19 at the time. I felt so alone.
Yeah.
Going through that whole process, and especially looking around the unit, like it was mostly older people, right?
Of course.
Not people I can connect with. So as a 19, 20, 21 year old, you know, throughout the years on dialysis, just wanting somebody to relate with, and I didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So now being in this position where I can support those programs, where I myself can go to the dialysis units and talk to other people who are, you know, kind of my age and say, hey, like, this is what it was like for me. And, oh, you have this question on, like, not medical related, but you have this question on, you know, who do I call if I need this type of support? Well, like, I know that answer. Like, I can provide that stuff for you. So it's impacting, like,
the
programs
doubt.
And the stuff that we do, it's really impacts lives.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, I got another question for you, but before we hit there, we got to throw to an ad. Carrie from Patchouli Rose, take it away.
Hi, it's Carrie with Patchouli Rose Herbal Apothecary. I know our summer is coming quickly to an end, and during the summer we always think of applying our sunscreen, but sunscreen is a product that we should be using every day of the year to protect our skin against harmful UVA and UVB rays, also against premature aging. I have a product called Dandelion Harvest, which is moisturizing, anti-inflammatory, and is great for anti-aging. You can use this every day of the year, and it's very moisturizing. If you want to check this product and any of my other products out, please go to patchoulirose.com.
And we're back. Okay. How did you line up this job? Because it seems kind of like custom made for you based on your experience. Like, how did that all take place?
Yeah. This it was interesting. I didn't know about the Kidney Foundation. So again, when I say raise awareness, this is why. I had no idea the Kidney Foundation existed until about 5 years after I got my transplant. So throughout it, post, I wanted to give back. So I Googled volunteer kidneys Alberta.
Right.
And the Kidney Foundation, of course, came up. So I started off as a volunteer in about 2015 and just helping out with whatever it is that they needed, events or me going to, you know, doing like educational presentations, whatever it was. I eventually had the opportunity to join this team in August of 2017.
Okay.
And I've been here in various capacities since.
Okay.
So what is that? Almost 6 years. I think I celebrate my 6 year next year. So, I on my personal end, I have a love for policy and for research and that type of work. So, like I went to U of A, I got a master's in public health. So, a lot of those skill sets that I think I just have. So I went out and you know did my schooling.
Right.
Like I bring here. Right. So when we talk about the programs that we're developing, when we talk about the advocacy that we do, you know, working with working with government members and trying to help the passing of, you know, certain policies that will improve the lives of our patients.
Right.
That's kind of it all brings it together. Like this job, as you said, is really custom made.
Yeah.
And it brings it all together for the skill sets I bring. Yeah.
I'm glad you talked about this a little bit, or you mentioned it, because I was like, it was in the back of my head and I forgot it. So you were 19.
Mm-hmm.
First semester,
mm-hmm.
There's no way during, or maybe there is a way, I don't know. Were you continuously going to school afterwards, or did you have to take a hiatus?
I for the semester directly after, so yeah. I got diagnosed like January, so your yes. winter semester starting.
Right.
I was in a full year course.
Yeah.
So I took that course, but I dropped all the other ones.
Okay.
And then I continued at a full time, you know, the five classes.
Yeah.
I was taking three classes ish throughout.
Really?
Yeah.
At the U of A.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I've been to the U of A. Like, you're walking around. Like, it's a campus.
It's a campus, yeah. Again, I reiterate that I feel like I was very lucky in my circumstances. I was younger.
Right.
So I felt like I could just maybe handle it more. And
yeah.
It's a great question. I always reflect about this. Is why, like, I shouldn't have done it. And, and when I encounter people who are going through similar experience now, like, I tell them, no, just, like, take the time. Like, you don't have to push yourself. But, I mean, back then I was just like, no, I got to keep going. I got to do this. I got to do that.
Yeah, and, good for you.
And
awesome.
Then I did. Yeah.
Well, dude, I could talk to you for hours, and I'll probably talk to you after this camera comes off. Hopefully you come back on and we have more chance to inform the public. But the shows are tight for a reason, so you can come back.
Yeah.
But before I cut you loose, everybody gets a shameless shout-out or plug. So we have the mic, the camera, the lights. Have fun.
Yeah, well, we have Renee Matters in Fort McMurray, so please check out the different events that she's going to be hosting. Like, we really want her out in the community, so support what you can. I mean, we are here based in Edmonton, but we provide programs and services for everything Red Deer up north to the territories. So we saw Fort McMurray, we recognized it was a need, a high growing area that we needed support.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Renee's there. Do what you can to support Renee. Reach out to me. Renee has my contact. Get it from her. Let's collaborate. Let's see how we can impact lives.
There we go. Awesome. Well, Fort McMurray, Wood Buffalo, the rest of the world. That's been another episode of the Max City Morning Show. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for tuning in. Big shout out to our title sponsor, Norrell Toyota, as well as Carrie from Patchouli Rose. Thank you both for your ongoing support. Other than that, I hope everybody's having a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
Thanks.
What a deadly old way to end another morning show. Later, boss.
It's so ballistic!
Talk about quenching your ugly thirst.